Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are live from the path.
I am a working man, I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost, work for the Son. I am a working man, oh yes I am. I am a special agent of the Lamb.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper on a stormy Monday evening. It's lovely and dry to be with you. Okay, we got a few big questions. So
I'm not afraid of tornadoes.
Oh, I didn't know.
I'll tell you that. And here's what I think. This feels like an arrogance to me. But every time there's a tornado warning, I think, the Lord's going to take me out by this tornado. What am I going to do? Do you know what I'm saying? There's a humility in it that goes, I mean, I could hide in the basement like a big sissy, but at the end of the day, if that tornado wants to be in my basement, it's the Lord's tornado. It'll go wherever it's going to go. And I think I might as well go out watching this thing come by and seeing what's up.
I think of it like if someone broke into your house, nothing seems worse to me than hiding in the closet and hoping they don't find me. Like, I feel like I'd rather just...
It never works in the movies.
I'd rather just run at them with my claws or whatever and hope things work out.
They can always see you through the little lavalier things, and they punch their through there.
The movies are an accurate representation of people's willingness to shoot you. Because here's the thing. I always think, like, some people will, like, get a gun out to try to rob you, and I'm like, you're not a murderer. You're just a robber. So shoot me. Go ahead. You know what I'm saying? Do you feel like it's a pretty big gamble that their pride might be hurt, and then they might become a murderer because you done stood up to him?
Yeah, yeah. Mike, you're acting like this. The movies misled you into how often people shoot. The movies have also misled you in how often you just walk up like John Wick.
Yeah.
Hey,
all
I
you
bet
got?
You won't shoot.
I think people won't shoot as often. Yeah.
I don't know if you could talk your way out of a robbery.
I think I would not hand it over. Maybe just because I'm in my age, I'm just like... Yeah, no.
I think there's plenty of people who would have no problem just shooting you and walking away.
Yeah. I know very few people like that. I don't know them.
But
well, I would hope not. I don't know them.
That's what
personally.
I'm saying. I think you're making assumptions based on people you don't know.
Your contention is I know very few murderers.
That's what I'm saying. There has to be very few amount of murderers out there.
I read the newspapers.
I know a lot of people.
Okay.
It happens all the time.
Okay, at the end of the day, I feel like people are less likely to violence or shoot. I could probably even take a couple whacks with the gun to the head and be like, you know what? Shoot me if you're going to do it. Otherwise, leave. I don't have time for this.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't be bothered.
It's like playing with their food, a predator.
Yeah.
It's like, don't hit me with the gun. Just shoot me.
Just do it if you're going to do it. And I feel like that's how I'm going to go out because of the sheer stubbornness that I've adopted.
That's like some of the big shooters, the big thing now, you go at them. You don't run and hide or get under a desk or whatever. You just like start throwing stuff
at
them.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Because they'll be like, I don't know what to do. They're not supposed to fight back.
It's just like the type of behavior that we prescribe as a society. Like you work in an office building and they tell you what to do. You know, someone's going to get mad and they're going to come in here with a gun or something. And the prescription is to like hide under your desk or whatever. And I'm like, there's one guy with a weapon and there's 150 people on this floor, and our decision is to just sit there and hide and
the
hope
bullet
he
can
doesn't
go through
come
that
over.
Desk.
Hope he doesn't shoot
like,
at
this
us.
Is, this is terrible advice.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, how do you go? Look, the odds are a couple of you are going to get hit in the wing. But like, if you all six go, like the dudes on the plane took this tactic. They're like, you know what? Here we go.
Let's
go. We're going down.
And at the end of the day, let's say he decides he wants to be shooting people. I don't want to get shot under a desk. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I want to be out in the wild if this is what's going to happen. At least I could go down making a counterattack, you know what I'm saying, or some kind of flanking maneuver. But I don't want to be cowering at my desk, smelling my feet, standing by all the surge arresters underneath all the desks. I don't want to go out that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, you're listening to Life from the Path. Two major topics, and then I have a small one. Major topic number one, like when we say community in the church, like what do we mean by that? Because at one... I'm not sure. Dan, when you first started ministry, were we saying the word community all the time? Or is that like like it's amped up?
We use the cool term family.
Family.
We're family here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Got it. Okay. So anyway, this is a term that we've used to try to get away from other terms of which...
Yeah, that's old.
...otherwise developed a negative connotation in some way or another. But I do think it's unclear to me the boundaries of what we're saying or how much this is tied to the scriptures at all. As I think about the scriptures, they're not using the word community either. And it doesn't mean that there's no concepts in here that matter. I just wonder if this doesn't have some relevance to the conversation we've been having in the last few weeks, which is something that the creation of what is a Christian flavored culture that is not the same thing as following Jesus. And if our community is primarily defined as a representation of our Christian themed culture and not necessarily following Jesus, well, then actually, we got to be careful in how we talk about community. And I think you can misuse it. So anyway, I think we should see, let's talk about what we, maybe what we mean sometimes and like what we should mean and then how to think about these various pods of people.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the other thing? There was another, something else that sounded kind of, I know what it is. Did it have to do with like, as we think about what it looks like to kind of follow Jesus, sometimes the things, maybe we kind of touched on this too recently, but like sometimes phrases we say, I think make things sound more black and white than they are. Like, we hit on this when we were talking about when people say it's a relationship, not a religion. We're like, I don't know. It's kind of a religion. Like, what do you mean? Why are you saying that? Or like, hey, is your faith transactional? Well, I mean, do I do things expressly, actions that I take expressly because of what I believe? Yes, I do. Yes, I do that. And is it depends on, is it wrong when I expect, like, I'm trading God for something? Sure. But, like, I also, in some ways or another, my marriage is transactional.
Yeah.
I agreed, and we share a life together with this lady, but there's also things that I do implicitly to keep peace or to otherwise know that she does these things, I do these things, and we... There's things like that.
Yeah. Jesus even implied it's kind of transactional. You have not because you ask not.
Yeah.
So ask and I'll give.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
That's transaction, right?
Yeah. And so, like, I understand. So I think that the maybe the thing to talk through is, like, I know why we say these things, because you're trying to make sure we don't get the tenor of it wrong. But it also can leave the complete opposite idea, which is that, like, that maybe anything that feels like those things is somehow wrong or unholy or whatever, when they're actually probably just part of what is a relationship with somebody or a following what it looks like to practically follow Jesus. And I'm not fighting for like, hey, can we have a shallow, you trade God quarters and prayers and then he gives you blessing. That's not what I'm saying. But like, if you, it's also, we're probably not getting it right if we walk too far away from, hey, you do have to ask, and there are things that you do from the kingdom, and yes, Jesus provides you blessings in return, or they're just natural, practical, earthly things. You don't lie, you end up in better relationships. You don't steal, your butt stays out of jail. These are all common, practical things that are great in the kingdom. And so, anyway, maybe it's just something in there to go, let's just be careful that like we don't become quippy for the purposes of sounding more wise than we are, and then otherwise, like, just mispaint the world in such a way that causes people to take the wrong implication.
Can you think of a Christianese language phrase that you actually hate?
Modern preachers. Sometimes I have trouble listening because I'll just every sentence I'm like, really?
Yeah,
we're gonna lean into this season of your life.
Oh yes,
stuff like that.
Yeah,
and it's like, they're not bad. No, I mean, but then just like.
It feels
nobody
overdone.
Nobody talks like that. I don't go down the street, hey, what season are you in? I'm really grief. I mean, I don't know.
I the one that drives me nuts is like there'll always be a super close-up picture of a lion's eye, and it'll be like, I'm not in the storm. I am the storm.
Ooh.
And I'm like, you're not the storm.
You're not the storm at all.
I'm just going to give this away right now, friend. No. If you believe you're the storm, you're mistaken. Right now, like, God's pretty awesome, and like, he can equip you with all kinds of stuff. But don't be fooling yourself. You ain't a storm. That's no good. That's going to let you down, right? Like, I don't... Like, anything that has to do with a super dramatic Lion of Judah shirt or something, or like a close-up of a lion's eye with the three crosses in it or something, I'm like, I don't know what you're trying to evoke out of me right now.
Well, yeah, anything that really that implies that like you are contributing to Captain Planet. Like you are one of the powers that combines to then provide a superhero. And like you and Jesus put your spirits together and then now there's some sort of bad mamma jamma hunting the world.
Now it's really going to work.
Yeah, like, yes. Yeah, there's a lot of that like self-empowerment thing that like you're using this notion of Jesus and the presence of the Spirit that somehow makes you in particularly more awesome, but it's always a posture towards the rest of the world. Like you may indeed be awesome. I'm not saying you're not. I'm just saying that like there's an arrogance almost to it that like, hey, with the power, I'm Spirit empowered to go then conquer the world. I'm like, I don't. No, you're not. Like, what are you saying that? You're in fact, Jesus's motion of Spirit empowerment is in deference and service to the world. Why are you on a different program? Like,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
What am I supposed to say instead of program?
No,
I have a limited vocabulary. Yeah.
You do. They're just really big words that people haven't used.
I want to be cruciform
years.
With my vocabulary. Okay. Anyway, we'll get to those two things. This is completely unbiblical related, but this is a thing that probably burned about 10 minutes on the car on the way here that I wanted. Maybe you guys could help me.
Oh, boy.
Let's say your name is Theodore Franco. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Theodore Franco.
But
every time someone sees it, they're going to say Franco. Like every time, what could you put? How would you write it differently without misspelling it to get people to say Franco?
Wait a minute. Your middle name is Frank?
No. No, your last name is Frank O.
Frank O.
It's not that there's no hyphen.
There's no hyphen.
It's like a Frank O.
Okay, and you are trying to avoid someone saying Franco.
I don't want him to say Franco. That's not how it's not my name. It said Frank O.
Why?
I can't help. This is my lineage. These are the people I'm from. We're from a long line of Francos.
Yeah. Dawson, help him.
No,
what do you do?
It's Franco.
It's Franco.
This is
it may have been Franco from where you came from, but where you are now, it's Franco.
I got Ellis Island is what you're saying. They said, we ain't doing it.
Yeah, I don't know if I would even notice enough that it took me a while. You had to say about five times before I thought,
it's
there's a
it's
difference.
It's because it's stupid. It's Franco, a stupid problem.
Then I thought you were saying Frank Ho.
I thought the last name was Ho and the middle name was Frank. I'm like, people are going to call you Theodore Ho. Okay. That's it.
I got it from the get-go. I just think it's a dumb question.
So this is what I want you to take away from. One, that's what took up my time on the way. I prayed for a few people, and then I thought about that. And secondly, if there is such a man out there, he is in an unenviable position that cannot be rectified. He just has to deal with his circumstances.
I think he just live with it. Like, is your Johnson or Johnson?
Yeah. Why? Yeah, Dan, that's a perfect example. No one's going to say Johnson.
Have you guys ever had issues in the past where people mispronouncing your last name?
Oh, yeah. Nobody says Fust right. It's always Fust.
Yeah.
Who says Fust in their mind and says it out loud and be like, yeah, that's the right
thing. That's gotta be it.
After hearing all the different ways you could have said Fust in your mind, you say Fust out loud and be like, that's the one.
Yeah, that's obviously not it.
That can't be right.
Here's the thing. The problem is you sound like a kind of a half a turd if you try to correct somebody.
Yeah.
It's Franco. No, you were like, Fust. Okay, Mr. Franco.
Right. It's so weird, right? We were like, look at this arrogant turd. But he just wants you to say his name right. And he probably even said it right to you. This is a common people do. Old people, like blue hairs and call center employees, do the same thing. Someone calls in and goes, hey, my name is my name is Franco, and they hear it. They heard you say it, and they go, "All right, Mr. Franco." Like they refused it. Like happens all the time. I don't understand. All right. Anyway, this apparently is. It's not a personal problem. I'm just saying it tied me up for a while. All right. Hey, hit me up on the Life from the Path complete line. I'm interested, actually, in your last name or some other. Maybe it's your first name and you're like, hey, no one says this right. And do you bother to correct them? And how is it gone? You can hit us up on the Life from the Path complete line.
I hope we're not really big in these countries you say, because I feel like there's going to be lots of people like, never guess what happens to me.
I once got told how I should pronounce my last name.
Oh, really?
Like my last name's Schrader, but a lot of people pronounce, even with the R-A-D-E-R, like, no, that's pronounced Schroeder. I'm like, you can think what you want, but I'm pretty sure I know how to pronounce my last name.
Yeah. How dare you, sir?
They're like, did you know that's actually pronounced Schroeder? I'm like, No.
That's not how
because
we pronounce
that's
it.
Not how my family pronounces it, so I don't know that's how I'm supposed to.
Like Mr. Franco.
Like
it's not F-R-A-N-C-O-E, Franco.
No.
With a elongated E on the end. Nope. Dude, the man's screwed. Either change how you spell it or just expect it to go wrong.
That's what I'm saying. There's things where, like, he's completely in the right, but he just, it's easier to
Can
be wrong.
Can we throw one of the squiggles on top of the C?
Yeah, like... I don't know what that squiggle does, to be honest with you.
Well, there's a few either. Different ones.
I just go, oh.
Oh.
All right, Dan.
Hey, we're going to do a new segment right after we do Secular versus Sullivan, which is cultural sensitivity with Dan Hudson.
You know what your name's going to be? Todd.
Todd. Blah, blah, blah. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Two Ds. Double D Todd.
Okay. 515-517-0085. Call or text. Tell me about your last name problems. I want to hear about them. Okay. Let's talk about this community business. Dan, when did we start doing this? When did we start saying community? Why did we move away from family?
Okay. And actually, I was thinking after I said that, when I first started, it was just the fellowship.
Oh,
it was like that's talking about the church, talking about whatever you do is the fellowship.
Okay. Yep.
And then somewhere in the 80s, we're like, okay, that's old fashioned. We're going to call it family because, you know, we're all family. We're close and we all know each other.
Yep.
Even if we're a church of 2000, we want a family group.
Yep.
And I don't know, somewhere along the line, in the last 10 years or so, we moved on from that because the next generation said, well, that just sounds old, you know. And,
yeah.
And community is the way that goes. Now we have community groups and. We talk about
Do you think
community.
It's also stemmed from the idea of that family is too close? Like, yeah. That's too personal
people
with the
like,
other people who go to church
you
with
that
you?
Up in my business.
Yeah, because, like, another thing I've, like, grown...
Back to Arizona.
Like, the idea of is, like, people have gone away from having porches and sitting on their porch to having a deck in the back. And they're like, I like my space and my family.
Yeah.
And I don't sit on the porch and, like, talk to everybody. Mm.
Dude, even actual communities or towns are set up this way now. They're like, I don't want to be talking to people when they come walking by with their dog. I want to enjoy nature facing the other direction from the garage.
We walked out of our front door like a week ago, and there's it's late, it's night, it's dark, and a police car pulls up, and the guy gets out with his flashlight, and he's shining at our neighbors and says, have you seen our neighbor? And I said, we've lived here 25 years, and I've seen her 5 times.
Wow.
And they're like, wait, I know. I did see someone go into her garage last week, and my wife's like, well, was it her? I don't know.
Yeah. It was some guy named Frank Hogan.
So I don't know what happened. My neighbor's house. I think I've seen my neighbor more times than that.
So that's community right there.
Okay. It's a nuanced question now. Because, one, have communities changed the way that they work? Is the thought behind, like, the way that we describe community groups, like in church stuff, right? Is it following that pattern, or if communities in general, like, are we trying to use it as the same term as fellowship or family? And, like, communities actually don't run that way anymore. We've had this conversation before about what we lost when YouTube offers, you know, like, advice on how to do all these things. So instead of making friends with a plumber or having, you know, a guy that knows how to do something or a gal that can help you figure something out, you're like, oh, I'll just look it up. And so you lost the ability to have to be in or the necessity of being in relationship with all these kind of people, not because you're using them, but because everybody was mutually, like, putting into the success of everyone else's life merely by having a skill or an ability. And you're like, don't worry, I have a butcher. Like, we know this guy, he butchers, or this guy fixes shoes, or this gal writes all the stuff for the paper, or she's the one that, like, installs all this and whatever. And so, like, because YouTube can get us through it and the knowledge of the how-to is available on the internet, then we didn't need those relationships anymore. Mm. So then it leaves us with, well, now all we have in common is how we like to spend our free time. We're not doing a thing together anymore or learning a thing together anymore. We're just like, hey, this is how I want to relax. Do I do it with other people or do I not?
Mm. It's interesting. So, like, in some ways, becoming independent implicitly made us less codependent, but just swap out that co for community. You're no longer actually dependent on groups of people that are around you anymore. And, like, we culturally, we celebrate the independence, which in some ways fine. But what it also means is that it becomes isolating, or to your point, Mike, like, your interaction with groups of people around you becomes an optional.
Yeah.
It's you don't actually have to do that. And so when it becomes, so it tends to be then that your circle implicitly kind of gets smaller. Whereas your dependence on the different people and the different skills, just the size of the community around you or whatever, or even your inability, even the advent of bigger machinery. Like, you used to have your whole, like, you and seven neighbors are going to help you go dig a pit for the horse that died.
Yeah.
Or now you just own a tractor. You just do it on your own. You don't actually have to call the six dudes. Now, no one knows that the horse died. You kind of just took care of it on your own. You didn't have to ask for their help. They're not going to call you when they need it.
Yeah.
Unless they need to borrow your tractor. Oh,
and like, no one knows you incurred the loss, right?
Yeah.
Like, put this happening 100 years ago. People are like, oh, you lost a horse. One, that's, you need help burying it. Two, that's a big financial loss for your family. Mm-hmm. Can we have dinner with you tomorrow? Or can we, hey, I actually just had a foal. You know, let's get that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you lost all that touch point for not having to be in a necessary relationship with someone.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Like, so, people talk about how much, like, phones have, like, connected us more, being like, I can talk to whoever I want. But I'm like, how much are we talking about the things that matter, or the things that's actually going on? Like,
yeah.
This has destroyed all community, even though we have all these different communities on our phones.
Which is probably why we actually have to call it a thing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's, like, less of, like, have we found a new word from fellowship to family to community? Has it been, like, just we're using a different word to call the same thing? Or are we just finding a word that more accurately describes what we're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, I do wonder then if the key challenge then becomes where things, just by the nature of how society has progressed, things that were otherwise naturally forming or influenced aren't that anymore. Like, they require a planning or some attempt to identify boundaries, whereas the boundaries would have been more natural even 300 years ago. So, like, as an example, you could say the church in your town 400 years ago, like, it was like it stopped on how far people went. Same with the school. Mm. Like, you didn't go visit another one. You didn't get in the car and drive to something somewhere else. Like, you lived around these people. You worship with these people. Your kids went to school together. There were not a bunch of other options to go do other things. That was your community. You didn't have to sort all these things out. Compared to today, and this is true in most church situations, is that, like, you've got the place where your physical location is located, or where is at, and then you might have a third, half of your congregation might be driving in 20 minutes away, 30 minutes away. We, in the house church environment, like, we had, this isn't quite true the same as it used to be, but, like, you know, we would have church, depending on the month, at one of the four corners around the metro. Like, somebody was 40 minutes away. And so it became an interesting question, which is, like, when we talk about the value or use of a church community, where do we mean? Because everybody lived in different towns. We didn't have a neighborhood that surrounded the specific location we met, just depending on the time of when it was. Different schools, different otherwise people around you and neighborhoods. And so, like, when we talk about things like church community, I think we're trying to advocate that, like, hey, it's, you have to be conscious about groups of people who are doing life together. But what does that even mean?
Yeah.
We do church, we meet together.
There's a spiritual bond where we're together in our understanding and view of God and our working out our faith.
Yeah.
And that's the highest priority. We're not gathered by work class or, you know, socioeconomic, it's our faith that drives us.
Yes. Now, but you could do that with places that, like, it's kind of irrelevant if you guys went to different churches. It wouldn't matter because that's not the boundary anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a value? This is where the things get interesting. Is, like, is there a value of sharing the same place of which you worship and, like, you meet and are formed and are hearing similar messages and things? Sure, I think there's a value in that. Is it necessary? I'm not sure it's particularly necessary, but I think that's what becomes interesting, where we are not as bound by our geography. Now people are trying to reestablish, where are these groups and in what way do they interact, and who do I consider, like, a core spiritual community versus something else?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is, like, it's why it feels like we have to work so hard at it, because it doesn't organically happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't organically happen as easily as it did. We'll put it that way. Yeah. And, like, just an example, like, from Bid's example of house church, right? Like, we have our family in particular, like, our community is the town we live in. We spend a lot of time with these people, and we pray and we worship and we do all the things. We tend to continue to go to church, right, with our spiritual community where we came from. And there's all kinds of great reasons for that, right? But like, if we had to peg down like where our living and dying, like the people that we're doing life with on an everyday basis, it is in a location proximity, and it's on purpose that way, right? Because like it just like those relationships for proximity hold organically, and like, and we don't have the option, like we have way more options for individual taste. Like we lost our suffrage for like little nuanced things we don't like. Churches trade people around because either they love the worship pastor or hate the preaching, or they love the preaching and they don't care for the worship, or their child care was like, oh, we didn't like the person running the nursery. We needed somewhere that would, you know, enrich our kids better or whatever. Like, and they will just keep moving church communities for like a preference reason that they didn't care for. Where like, once again, put this 100 years ago, there is no way. People are like, even if the local butcher's a turd, you're like, he's the butcher.
Right?
Yeah. You just
deal with him.
You just tolerate him. You're like, get in and out as fast as you can. Or Mary Bell just sits in the back warbling, doing total disservice to Amazing Grace, and you're like, Lord, I can't wait till this is over. But you're not like, we should start our own church where Mary Bell is not there, so worship can be so great, in my opinion. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, we took on there's a selfishness to it. Like, even with our online communities and the way that we do social media, and like, it's not like the social media companies aren't feeding into it. They're like, this is curated for you. Do you know how much good it does for you to suffer through stuff that is not curated for you? It builds character in a person. Instead of going, this is for me, this is for me, this is curated, these are all the things I love. And then basically you spent an hour going, me, right? And so like, how are you possibly going to come out of that and be able to look at the world around you and go, how can I pour into this, instead of going, how can this be more to my liking?
Yeah. The church has fed into that, because the successful churches, I mean, I've been in the Des Moines area for a long time, and I've seen churches come and go that are the super popular church of the moment, and they just happen to be the ones that feed into all those felt needs of like, oh, I like the music, I like the programming, I like the sparkle. Then a new church comes in and it has a sparkle, and it's just the same people move to the next church, you know, and all of a sudden this one's selling their building and moving to another thing and changing their name. But it's all because they're going after the selfish, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
The need for the perfect atmosphere.
Yeah, this atmosphere I'm looking for, and and it just looks like going to a casino. Everything's in the key of C or whatever. You know, they have everything to a science. The smell, the lighting, the sound, the sights, everything. And it's the churches have done that as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if it's good or bad. I'm just saying it because they grow, but they tend to just be getting people from other churches.
Yeah.
And they call it evangelism.
I actually had someone, I talked to someone this week, and they were, we've met before, but not real close. Anyway, he starts talking to me about his church experiences, and it sounds like he's kind of frustrated with the situation that they were in. And I don't know, it felt like he was trying to like, hey, you know, I'm interested in.
Yeah, pitch your place to me.
Yeah. It's not a good reason to do anything. Like, and so, well, so what I talked, what I said was, I'm personally, let's talk. Like, I'm here to help you in any way I can help you. What I'm not actually out to do is go try to figure out if there's a Christian who's dissatisfied with some other Christian expression to come to our place. Now, it doesn't mean that God won't do that, and it doesn't mean it never happens, and it's not sometimes perfectly fine, but like, I'm not out of the gate like that. That's probably about five conversations in on talking to a person and maybe figuring out like whatever needs to heal where you're at. Like, it probably makes sense to do those types of things. Because like, why would I want to do that? Like, why? I don't really want to go around moving people around unless God is moving them himself. And to the extent that it feels very like personal to people, if they're shopping, they're going to be dissatisfied with our situation, whether it's now or whether it's 8 months from now. And so like, I'm not interested in it, but it felt weird because it felt like I was getting teed up for the type of thing where like, you're the pastor, you're supposed to go, hey, well,
you should come
over
to our place.
Lecture.
We would never do something like that.
And I thought, I have no interest. I'm not going to do that.
It's all a big game. It really is.
Yeah.
I've had people like try to talk to me about their churches or their community, and they're like, I don't know if we can stay here. We just, you know, they're theologically, they're just blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, do you think that they're wrong according to the Bible? They're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, where are you going? It feels like you should stay and show them where they're misunderstanding Jesus. They're like, oh, we can't tolerate this. I'm like, what do you mean you can't tolerate this? If God put you there and you know the difference, I find you to be a coward, sir. I don't know where you're going. I'm like, if God's like, you got to get out of there, it's a sinking ship, they're not going to listen to me or you, then it's probably time to go. But if you're just like, they didn't say a thing I agree with, I'm like, that sounds like a ripe pattern for discussion, my boy. It sounds like you say, hey, we should have some coffee and figure out where we're taking this wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, actually, it's I don't know, this seems like a cliche thing to say, although I've not heard someone say it, but like, where Jesus is in the boat, it's never a sinking ship.
Right.
It doesn't matter how big it is. Doesn't matter how crappy the worship
guy
is.
Sounds like a t-shirt.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. But where Jesus isn't in the boat, it's going to sink regardless of how cool the boat looks or how many people are in it. And so, like, it ain't surviving the storm, Holmes.
Okay, so the question is like biblically, or has been said, maybe not biblically, like, one, why are we pushing community? Right. In a way, like, and I think Paul does this. I think Paul's big community unity. He's big unity.
Unity.
Right. And so, like, community is unity. You know what I'm saying? That, but like, in general, like, there's biblical basis for saying, look, like, those in the faith need to be united in the way that we're presenting Jesus. That's it. Right. Not Jesus plus. But like, is it the church angle tends to go, you need to be in community. But doesn't define that very well. Like, so maybe the better question is what do you actually need? Right? What do you need? And can God, is that different depending on what God's doing in your life or what he's asking you to be a part of, right? There's missionaries out there. I mean, they're running it solo. They're creating a community from scratch in a language that they don't know. And like, they're living in a place for 20 years just so they can learn the language well enough to write a Bible in it and then go, hey, this is who Jesus is, right? And so, like, they're living without a constant contact community around them, and they're living in a community that doesn't know who Jesus is on purpose with the goal of creating them so people can come to know him. So, like, that's not prescriptive for everybody. But we generally tend to make it that, like, hey, everyone should be in this community group and you should have X amount of community. You should be with old people older than you, people not as old as you, helping them come along and all the things, right? But like, it feels like it's not as black and white as that. It feels like that, like, it's a conversation to have with Jesus and be like, hey, show me where I need to be. Help me see where I need to be. I can make a couple good guesses. Like, if I'm newly married and I don't know how to be a husband, then, yeah, let me find a godly guy who's following Jesus and he's been a husband for a while and go, hey, man, I don't know how to do this. Couple pointers. Can you help me see things correctly? Like, some of these things are logical steps that you can find people around you to help you get through that. But in general, like, what are we actually even talking about when we say community?
I wonder if, so maybe the way that I would think about it is like, we are over-prescribed on how exactly it is supposed to work. For example, do you need to be at a small group in your church? No, there's nothing biblically that says you have to be at a small group in your locational church. It's not biblically necessary. But the reason we do all these things is looking out at the way that your New Testament writers looked at the world is like, again, I think we're having to prescribe into a situation that you wouldn't have had to force them into. They would have been like, why would I want to be isolated? I would not just hang out in my place and not be around these people. Because you can't do a lot of the things that that the early church looked at and says, this is good. Like, well, how can we get together and help the widows if we're not getting together? Like, how can we otherwise, how can the older ladies teach the younger ladies if they're never around any younger ladies? How can you edify each other? How can you worship together? Like, how can we all get together and read the letter that Paul wrote to us in Colossae? Well, because we gather there. And like, but the thing is like, they didn't have to go, hey, let's all get together and read the letter. Like, that's what they just did, because it was like they were in the area. They wanted to worship Jesus. This is where the worship of Jesus was happening. This is where people were teaching. This is where people were sharing. And so, like, I think we are somewhat culturally different in that we actually have to seem to kind of cajole people into communal situations of which they would have A, naturally been into, and B, naturally desired. But the consequence to that is like, we are a lonely, depressed, suicidal, anxious generations of people. Mm-hmm. We are separated from human interaction, not only like I think it gets worse generationally the closer we are to technology, but like it also because we are distinct by generations. You've got Dan can attest to this just with the work that that Pathway offers for like some of the folks down the street. Like these are lonely people who are in their 70s and 80s. In cultures and times, it would not have always been that way. These folks would have been living in houses. They would have been living in the middle of a community, not separated off in like a blue hair apartment complex. And whatever, I'm not, just because it's older doesn't mean it's righteous and holy, but I'm saying that like our advancements in some areas, far fewer people are dying of starvation than ever have in the history of the world. This is a positive. Technology has done this great, right? But that advancement brings with it new problems that other that people did not used to have, and then we have to be intentional about it. And so what a church is trying to do, we're trying to put together patterns that go, look, you may not realize this, but you're becoming isolated and we can't actually serve each other well or the world around us well if we do not in some ways create some sort of momentum or organization to get people to do things that they are no longer doing naturally. So I think that's at our best intent. It looks like that. Does that sound right, Dan?
Yeah, yeah. I think we'll read Acts 2 and say, well, that's what the new church was. You know, they met together in homes and they broke bread together and they, you know, they had the fellowship, all these things. And they listened to the teaching, the apostles' teaching, like every day. And we try to manufacture that again. But I think they just, that's just what was happening.
Yeah.
They didn't say, we're starting a new program where you will come to hear the apostles.
Right.
You know, that's just what was happening. And they were gathering and they were drawn to one another and they were, oh, let's break bread together. And we have, I mean, it's good. We're trying to duplicate, you know, what was going on, but it becomes a program, and then that's where we fall short. We're cookie cuttering,
yeah.
You know, disciples. And
so I have a question actually for Dawson. Then is like if I had to say something that I believe that like especially your generation is hyper aware of, it's being like. Invited into programs. Like it tends to be like, I just feel like your generation is hyper aware that people are trying to put you in a program and you don't love it. Like you're like, I see what you're trying to do. Like the fifth wall is gone. And so, so you're kind of like, I see what you're trying to do here. And I'm slightly suspicious of it. So my question to you would be is like, where do you think that like the church or Christians in general, like, where we're doing this poorly, where we're not understanding what we're asking out of people.
Ask that again. Sorry, that last little bit.
Like where we think the way that we are presenting like a biblical community or a church community, like, can you think of some ways where you think that like the church is doing this poorly? Like we're not, like people aren't interested. You know, where they're like, I like the thing that you're trying to get me into. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'll go, maybe I won't go.
Yeah, I think, especially with the whole phone situation I was talking about earlier, everything feels like a sales pitch. Mm-hmm. And it feels like I'm trying to be sold on every single thing that I participate in nowadays.
Yep.
Like I can't naturally come about something and decide if I want to make a decision if I want to be part of it or not based on like what I know and like what I'm thinking. And I can't go through that reasoning process just because everything's being sold to me at this like 10 second
probably so blatantly.
Elevator. Yeah.
Right. And it's
and
so
nobody's
like
trying
right
to hide
now.
It anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that everybody's like, and this is exactly why. These are the 10 reasons, top 3 reasons why you should be here. And everything, they feel like they have to defend themselves.
Yeah.
And them feeling they have to defend themselves makes all of our brains be like, well, what are you trying to hide then?
Yeah.
Or like what,
yeah,
if
yeah.
you have to defend yourself on why I should come here, then
yeah, why'd you
I would
come
rather
fired
just,
out so hot?
Yeah, like I would rather just show me why it's a good time to be here. Yeah. Show the fruit.
I wonder, maybe that's kind of the gist of it too. It's like, we feel like it has to have such a point on it, right?
Yeah, we feel like it's to sell rather than
yeah.
Instead letting the Lord bring people there himself.
Right. Where God would go, would like stretch in a person or the presence of a Holy Spirit in a person would go, hey, Mike, you need community. You need to find people around you, or like you need to find a dad who's been a dad for like kids who have graduated high school because you've not done that before. Like I felt that way where I knew that the position of life that I was going into, I felt like God was like, I'm telling you right now, you don't know how to do this. You need to find some people around you that will speak into your life, and they better be people that are following me. And I knew that inherently. I didn't have to be told that. I just knew that if I was going to be a part, like I just wanted to have some wisdom and knowledge of people who had been following Jesus for the thing that I was going to be a part of, you know? And maybe that's where, like, we're cheapening the product, where we feel like we have to sell it. Right? Like, we could probably turn around and take all of the gimmicks out of it and spend that time praying that God would move in someone's, you know, heart and soul to bring them to know him, and mm-hmm. and let it work out that way, where people were coming to Jesus instead of being sold to church. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think they focus on the wrong part of the community. They think the community is just having people there and everyone being there. I don't think the community is just how many people you can get in one congregation. The community is when we start having the conversations about what we're reading in our Bibles. Like, I think it's essential for all of us to come together and talk about what we're reading in our Bibles, because if everybody reads alone, we're going to have, if 15 people all read the Bible, and same thing, we're going to have 15 different interpretations of what the Bible said.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to bring us all back together and come to a consensus of, like, the Lord speaking into our lives and what we've pulled from scripture to what's actually being said.
Or if you show up and go, I feel like the Lord's leading me to do this, and then you have some people around you that go, what? No.
Exactly. And you'll never come to those conclusions by yourself.
Yes.
But that's what community, I guess, is in my brain, rather than just how many people we can get in a congregation, which is, I feel like, what you were kind of touching on earlier about.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows it's a elevator pitch every time I hop on there and find a new church.
And it was like, I think Ben was talking about this a couple weeks ago, where it had to do with, like, when people were getting baptized, and right, and we're like, hey, we do a baptism Sunday like 2 months from now, just hold tight. And I'm like, it's a weird thought in my brain that goes, I mean, just invite your community. Invite the people who've been walking through this with you. And maybe mm-hmm. that's 3 people. And maybe it's 15. I don't know how many people the Lord's been using to, like, shuffle you. It's like when they start handing the roses out at graduation ceremonies, where they're like, hey, you give a rose to the people that, like, really made an impact in your life, right? And then all the seniors go out and give roses to people. This is the baptism list for me. These are the people that need to be there. After mm-hmm. that, I don't know. Like, just because they go to the same church as you, I don't know if they're really your community. Right. You know, there's people that I've always known going to church, and I'm like, I like that guy. All right. But, like, I don't know. You know?
Yeah. OK. So I do think that brings the conversation maybe to a little bit of a point mm-hmm. is that, like, I think we can relieve ourselves of the burden of going of, like, thinking who's in and who's out of this thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a hard and fast line. I think to your point, it's like, hey, I'm going to get baptized. Who should I invite? I don't know. Whoever you want to invite. Like, what?
Who do you want to be there?
Yeah. Like, just do that. But if that's the most narrow version, and maybe it even gets more narrow than that, like, hey, who do I say the things that I don't say to everybody? Well, it's probably a smaller list of people. It should probably be at least a couple, but it's not 50, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other side, if we's like, hey, how do I serve community? I find that to be the same question as, like, who is your neighbor? Like, who did we take off that? Like, that doesn't have anything to do with the people who meet in a particular place on a Sunday morning. It doesn't have anything to do with the people you see at coffee on Thursday. Like, I don't know why we even tried to draw a box around that one. So, like, hey, who can I be in service to? Absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
Who am I otherwise accountable to? Because our lives are entwined. They've given me permission. I've given permission back that I want to be held accountable by these people. That's probably a really small number. Mm. Who follows in the other ways in which you use the word community in between? All kinds of things, but I think that's actually fine. You can use the word flexibly, but we do need to be careful that we don't actually use it as if it is a single thing when we start otherwise saying, look, are you serving your community? And what we really mean is some sort of, like, pet thing that you really care about, and I want you to get involved at the church doing this particular thing. I don't know. I'd be real careful about that piece.
Yeah.
I think that's mm-hmm. the pace where, like, gray is fine.
Yeah, yeah. Are you giving to the building fund because this is your community?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I don't care whether we can play basketball here. You know what I'm saying?
Actually, and I think this has been true, like, ever since we've done house. We just don't have expenses coming in. So, like, all our stuff goes out. I think Mike and I both have, like, I've given to other churches doing things because they're people doing Jesus mm-hmm. things. They're going to build a thing. Like, as much as I like don't have an inclination to have property, it doesn't mean God isn't using other people to have property, and I will give money to it. And so, like, it's just one of those things where it's easier. The narrative is a lot simpler if you basically control your own bit. And maybe that's a little bit, that's been a something to be considered, but about from like a house church perspective, all our stuff gets stripped away because like I don't even have anything to orient it towards. And it caused you to go, well, what have I oriented it towards anyway? And did I need to? Well, the answer is no. Are there practical realities? Well, you can't have people just like, you do kind of need predictable groups of people. If you, as a group of people together going, look, we're going to pay a power bill here. Okay, well, like try to be predictable then. But like, and you wouldn't go bailing around anyway, because like you show up to this place because this is where your people are. This is the people you've agreed to hang around. Like, people will naturally gather. I just don't think we have to be so constrained about it. And I don't. And I think we got to be careful that we don't become heavy-handed in a way that ultimately doesn't like cause disunity, but causes the perception of separation that doesn't have to exist.
Yeah, I think if there's a thing that I would, I don't know, really like just ask. Like us as Christ followers to pray on is like making sure that we're not creating spaces within our church that are keeping you from being out in the world, right? I know that there's not so many churches that have these giant basketball courts, right? But like you need to stop doing that. You need to go play basketball at the Y with everybody else. You know what I'm saying? Like we take the what used to be in the community, like of our town or the people that God has put us, you know, in proximity to serve, and we're like, we should have our own basketball court. Now, why don't you just go play with everybody else? So then you can reflect God's goodness out into the world. Why don't you go eat at the restaurant? Why don't you buy coffee from Starbucks or the local Scooters or wherever you want to buy it? Like, don't create such a compound at your place that gives people a reason to not be reflecting Christ's goodness out into the world. And I know there's a line there. Like, I'm like you want to have childcare at the church. I get it. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying all the things all the time, but like, just be careful that you're not creating a Christian compound that replaces people living actual life, right? And meeting other people who might actually need the good news you have, opposed mm-hmm. to just coming around in a community of like, I already have the good news. Me too. Well, I did watch Walking Dead one time. I'm like, all right, come here. To the woodshed with you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, cool and all, but come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's big salvation things. There's big God movement things. And if we continually clump up and like, where we don't have the local butcher anymore, or we can have Walmart deliver our own stuff. Sometimes you should go to the store anyway, even if Walmart will drop it off. Just go every once in a while anyway. Get in the community, meet some people. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, go say hello to the guy who's putting grapes where they belong. You know, it's that kind of stuff that, like, I know that because of the technology, we feel busier with while we're at the same time accomplishing less. And like, it feels a way on a human body. And that is generational through multiple generations, right? Like, even like folks my age that are on the cusp of not being a completely generational technology. But at the end of the day, like, I still take on anxiety from the way that the world has changed merely because it's nonstop. It's nonstop attention seeking. And to Dawson's point, right, all of it wants all of your attention. Nobody's there to casually let you view something. They're like, they want to sell you an idea, a product, a way of thinking, a way to make yourself better that's not even proven, right? It's just an idea where a smiley person said on Instagram for 20 seconds, like, my life has been so perfect ever since I started snorting apple cider vinegar. And you're like, man, that's the thing I've been missing. I've never snorted apple cider vinegar. Maybe I'll start that. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're all freaking lies. And you'd know that if you met more than one person who would be like, yeah, I tried that. It's terrible. Don't do that, you know? Anyway, I should have Pope-style advised that. We haven't done that in a while. But, like, I don't know, man. There's a lot of people out there that God really loves. Do you know what I'm saying? And, like, I just feel like we're built to be out in that mess a little bit, even with some prayed up and some protection, you know, and your community gets to strengthen you in a way that says, okay, but we're going out. We're going to have coffee at the local coffee shop, mm-hmm. not hiding from everybody else.
A community should be, like, recharging. Like, Sunday should be where you recharge, and then you go out for the rest of the week. And spread the good
yeah.
news.
Oh, yeah.
If this we keep is on what, clumping yes. up these walls, and this is the church is the only place we go to throughout the week, then we're not expanding the community.
Right. We know a good thing. It's yeah. called good news. We should tell some folks.
Yeah, you're listening to Life from the Path. Hey, hit us up. You got any thoughts on that conversation? Hold on. Just before we cut it off, where will the word evolve? Once we try to get away from community, what are we going to move to?
What's the next word?
Yeah. What's the guess on the next word?
Pods.
Stop. Absolutely not.
It could be pods. Faith streams.
Yeah. We'd just like you to join our spiritual pods.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Yeah.
It's kind of expanded into a generic doing life together, but it's...
That kind of thing where I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, I don't
know. These people don't live at your house. They don't live next door to you. You probably don't do life together. You see yourself on a Sunday
morning. You meet for an hour a week in a small group.
Yeah.
it's a life group.
It's saturated with drama. And we just stop doing that. It's just because it makes it feel more heavy.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we feel like it's necessary to have to do that. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't invite people. I think I've invited a decent amount of people to be part of a Bible study with me, either one-on-one or a pretty small group. And it is never my thought. I think I'm involved now. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Once we've done a Bible study together and we've talked about Jesus at length, I'm like, I'm in until you kick me out. That's it. We're doing life together. Because as you go through going through God's word, he's going to reflect back into you and you're going to be like, oh, here's some things about me, or here's some things about my family, or here's where I'm struggling thinking through this right, or here's where my heart's not quite meeting where God is wanting to be. And I'm like, this is life together. This is what this looks like. And so we played kickball one time, not life group, you know what I'm saying? But we've been through the Lord's word together and hashed some stuff out in our own lives. Ooh, we're in. You know what I'm saying? We're doing life
and
together.
I actually think this is why it doesn't matter how impressive, when I think about pastors, Dan and I are not the most eloquent men who have ever taught the word of Jesus. Dan is kind of, I'm less so.
I'm no.
so, but the reality is, I think the best pastor for you as an individual is the person who is in your life. It's not that there's wisdom and knowledge that can't be taken in from other people. There's all kinds of people that I like to listen to, but that it does not replace people, pastors or anybody who can look you in the eyeballs, where you had the chance to say a thing to them and they have a chance. If you're not in a situation where someone can refine you, then you actually should not take any accountability for having attempted to refine them. And I think about that in the most extreme ways, where your kids should be refining you, your spouse for sure. But any situation which you're like, I'm the person doing the refining, unless that whoever you're interacting with, and it could just be someone you've been in the faith for 40 years and someone's been it for 4 minutes, you should walk into that room going, this person might be refining me. Lord's got a fire on them. I hope I'm changed by the goodness of Jesus through whatever's going on in their life. Where that's true, but that can only be true locally. And so there's no size, there's no wit, and there's no wisdom that otherwise takes that away from the fallible, stumbling guy who only has two sermon examples and uses words people don't understand is still to your benefit because he knows you.
Hey, and are you know trying him. To sell me?
Yeah, I'm just saying, get with the program. Become cruciform. Okay. All right. You're listening to Life from the Path. Hit us up on the Life from the Path complaint line. I think the other thing we're going to talk about was a little bit nebulous anyway, and we spent a decent amount of time on that thing. So maybe let's do some advice.
Okay. Here we go.
Franco.
Dear Life from the Path, my brother has found love again. His first wife passed away from cancer 2 years ago. He is getting married in 2 months. We were never super close, but have always been civil to each other and spent an hour or two with each other during holiday meals or birthdays. Our mother is 89 and lives at his home in an added-on apartment. She's our common denominator.
Okay, that would make sense, dude. What a weird thing to say.
Yikes. Because my brother is quick-tempered and short with me and others, I'm afraid that after Mama's gone, he will have no use for me and I'll never see him again. I sent him an email stating my fear, and his reply was shocking. He said he didn't like my facial expressions. He also said he doesn't like my mannerisms and feels nothing I say is genuine, but very fake. He also told me he wasn't alone in his thoughts. I felt like he had stuck a knife through my heart. He said he wished he had a video of me so I could see how fake I was. I cried and got physically ill.
Wow.
I am so embarrassed that he and others see me that way that I've decided not to go to his wedding. I cannot be in a room full of people who have made these judgments about my integrity. Am I making the right choice? Should I go to my for my mother's sake?
Now, mom's 90, right? 89?
Yeah.
So they're like 70.
This guy's got to be 70 years old.
65, 70.
Okay.
I sent him an email.
With the last thing being yahoo.com.
Wow, I can't. What would you even write? Dear brother.
At Hotmail.
Okay, here's... There's two possibilities. They're going to feel like they're on extremes, but I do feel it's necessary to sort them out. The first one is, and I'm sorry, but I need you to take a long look in the mirror and ask yourself, are you disingenuous? Do you have dumb facial expressions? Like, are you a person where, like, this man does not know how to take you in because you're a fraud?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a small possibility, but I think you should consider the fact that possibly, given this dramatic email that you've sent in, this may be at least partially true. There's a way that it's completely not true, but I'm just, like, you should just check that to start. On the other hand, let's say you're not any of these things, and you know that. Then my advice to you would be, you've got to stop allowing the influence of people who you don't actually want to be influenced by. Like, mm-hmm. I would say, like, 9 out of 10, I hear people, when like, I have conversations with people, and they're like, this person hurt my feelings, or like, this, you know, I feel, they made me feel bad about myself, or whatever. I'm like, my first question is, like, in general, was this person a jerk? Yes. Why?
There you go.
Why have we invested so much in what a jerk thinks? Like, of all the people to allow to have influence in your life, I wouldn't go to the jerk store and find somebody as the start. And so, like, the question is, if anything they're saying is true, and this is hard, but, like, I don't care whether they're a jerk or not. If they're saying a true thing to you, you should be open to being refined by it. Okay? People that love you, people that hate you, either one can say a true thing. Be humble. Like, be refined. But if it's not true and it comes from someone who doesn't love you, you gotta let it go. You just gotta skip it entirely. I don't even know why you want to go to his wedding.
Yeah. Yeah, the question was, I'm afraid that after Mama's gone, he will have no use for me and I'll never see him again.
He doesn't have use for you already, except like, for to be a turd.
Okay. You know what I'm saying?
You got to get out of it.
At the same time, he's your brother. I mean, you don't have to be his best friend, but you can still be in his life. I mean,
he's a turd, Dan.
I know, but you can go to his wedding and be the adult in the room, you know, and
do
say...
Do you think the guy wants him there? It's not clear to me the brother even wants him to come.
Maybe not. Well,
did he get an invitation?
Yeah, that's the...
Yeah?
Or is he...
Yeah,
just he got an invitation. He just heard about it from Mom.
Yeah. Like, I gotta be...
I think just he's just too wound up about the whole thing. Like, you know, it's like, take what you get out of that relationship. Be cordial. Smile, nod, do your thing. But have your friends be fed elsewhere. Have your community elsewhere.
Yeah, it's actually a fairly immature stance to not be able to look at a relationship and go, what is this really? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, this sounds like a high school romance more than anything else, where you look at somebody and go, oh, I love them so much. My life will never be complete unless they will date me. And it turns out, like, a year later, you're fine. And it really wasn't as big of a deal as maybe you had let on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so, like, is it your brother? Sure. Do you have only apparently one common denominator, which is your mom? Okay, that makes sense based on the brother status. And then you go, I don't know, we just never clicked. We never got along. We don't actually see the world the same way. Like, I love the guy, but, like, I'm not asking him to play chess with me, right? If he needs help or wants to talk or something, I'm in. But other than that, I'm not calling him every other day, checking up and see what's up. That's just not the relationship we have.
Yeah.
And then be okay with that. Okay.
Yeah, I guess the question would be, like, would he benefit or would the brother benefit from being there?
Yeah.
Like, if no one's getting anything out of it, then...
What are we even doing here?
What's the point of even thinking about it?
We're keeping up this whole charade. Like, none of it's true.
I feel like he has enough information here to take a glance at the relationship and see if it's worth going.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is you can easily make this about you and go, like, do you even want me there? And we're like, oh, here we go, Mr. Mr. Big Drama, disingenuous again.
This brother may have been pegged.
Yeah.
If he did get the invitation, obviously there's a slither of him that wants him there.
I mean, so except like,
you already have that answer.
Just show up and sit down and shut up. You know what I'm saying? Staying about you. You know?
Yeah.
Dude has his mom living with him. His wife died of cancer 2 years ago. He's found love again, and you want to be like, well, what about me? Well, I don't know. What about you? You know?
I don't even know you. I don't know mom.
Yeah. Your facial expressions are ridiculous.
That's a harsh thing, but a thing a brother would say. Dude, I hate your face.
Yeah.
They can sit in the back row then.
I don't. He doesn't like my mannerisms. I mean, what's he doing? You know, what exactly mannerisms is?
I don't know. Like, there's just a sense. I mean, this is worse in families, of course, because you're around people all the time. But like, just stop being so sensitive. I don't know how many times I got to break. I get four kids, right? And like every one of them, there can't be a half an hour goes by where someone's like, hey, knock that off. I'm like, how about you just ignore it? Like, what is the problem? He's really bothering me. We'll stop being bothered by it. It's way easier to control what you're bothered by than to try to get the rest of the world to stop bothering you.
So
let's just do that bit.
Yeah, this is where I'm just, you don't have to label this man completely with this phrase, but this thing where he goes, I felt like he had stuck a knife through my heart. He said he wished he had a video of me so I could see how fake I was. I cried and got physically ill.
That still feels fake to me.
Now listen, dude, if you vomited because your brother said he didn't like your mannerisms, you got some other stuff brewing. I ain't saying that your brother's a saint, but I'm saying if his words carry that much of a dagger to you at 70, I mean, you are a little much. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, let's figure out a way to not care so much about what your brother says at you with 70 years worth of life on you. You know?
Actually, so like that gets to a broader point, which is like, if so much of what you think about yourself is dependent upon what other people think about you, you have put all your ante on the wrong pot, my man. Mm-hmm. Like, these are fallible humans. Even the best of us are going to get it wrong. And like your self-perception, this is why you depend on Jesus to remind you of things about yourself. Because one, you don't hold it well on your own. And two, other people are often only thinking about themselves. You are periphery to them. It's just the nature of a human. And so like, it's just a very fragile place to be, which is dependent on the feedback of other people. And I will also present to you, and this is a hard word, but like, you also are useless to the rest of the world if you don't have anything to offer but to receive someone else's perception of you. You mean I can't help be a refinement to somebody else if I'm that concerned about what they think of me. And so you become actually useless. All you are is a receiver, and you actually can't give much to the world in that way, and you're not. And so, like, to contribute to the health of a community, to the health of the relationships, to the strength of your own self, like, have some backbone. Don't be as dependent upon fragile people for how you think about yourself. Let Jesus help you with that bit. And then otherwise, just approach things without overinvesting in what people are saying.
Yeah, because the truth of the matter is, your brother could be a jerk, and your mannerisms are cool. And he just don't like him because he's not a happy man. He's got no joy in his life. And you want to, what, tone it down or feel a way about it? The man's wrong. Like, if he's wrong, he's wrong. So, like, yeah, you better figure out what's true here and then move on. You know what I'm saying? This guy's carrying way too much weight in your life. Okay, Secular says, your brother may have found love again, but he has some real problems. That he would speak to you that way was cruel and deliberately hurtful. Could he have some unresolved sibling rivalry? If that's the case, you cannot fix it for him. Under the circumstances, not wanting to attend that wedding is understandable. However, just because your brother says something does not make it true. They may be his feelings, but he doesn't have the right to speak for all of your other relatives. That is why I hope you will maintain your relationship with the rest of the family and not allow him to drive you away. Yeah. Yeah, I guess, dude.
I don't know. Yeah. That doesn't feel like sibling rivalry to me.
Yeah.
That's a weird thought that, like, maybe
they don't feel like siblings.
Yeah, yeah. Good point.
You know what I mean? They just feel like two people who know mom. If that's your only common denominator.
That's true. It'd be like I was real good friend with a guy named Bill, and Bill always wants to tell me about his other real good friend, Steve, and I'm like, you know, screw Steve. I'm obviously a better friend here. I don't want to hear no more about Steve.
I think that prescribes too far into the situation, and it is a bit, all of it's irrelevant to the extent that, like, you know, you just don't let him have so much influence on your life and try to do the right thing. Now, here's the thing. I guess I would say, I was thinking about, Dan, what you said, like, I think you could be the bigger person, go to the wedding if he wants you there. If there's something about you showing up that's going to like somehow taint the day, that is kind of his deal. He's being immature, but don't go.
Yeah.
Like, it's his day. And so, like, just put him above. Just think about what's best for him and act accordingly.
I mean, they're senior citizens. It's not like this is, they're 20 years old and getting married and having a big thing with 29 people in the bride's party. You know, it's mm-hmm. they're just getting together and they're getting married, and whatever time they have left, they're going to be married. I mean, it's just lighten up. The whole thing needs to lighten up.
Yeah, take some steam out of it.
Yeah.
Dude, I would get a giant picture of my face made. And if you talk to me this way, I'd be like, okay. Now comes the billboard, and I would put it right by your house. I would change facial mannerisms every couple hours. I'm like, screw you, Ben. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Last one. Dear Life from the Past, I had 3 close girlfriends in college. Good night. How long were you in college?
At the same
time? Yeah. Okay. Woo. Here we go, dude.
They weren't that close.
Here we go. All right. We lost touch with one of them more than 35 years ago.
We?
Oh, I
we?
Think it's Wait. A gal.
What?
Okay.
We?
Yeah.
Oh, just okay.
She's talking about her friends.
We?
Yeah. I'm like, it couldn't have been
I'm
that
a Mormon
close,
now.
Mr. Fred Astaire. All right. Let's start over. Okay. I'm assuming it's a lady. She had 3 friends in college.
Mm-hmm.
We lost touch with one of them more than 35 years ago. She has family in our area, but moved to the Midwest and stopped communicating with us, though she regularly visits family nearby. Over the years, I got a new job, married, had 2 kids, divorced, moved, and retired. This friend has recently gotten back in touch. I don't know what prompted it. I have friends who have supported me all my life and deserve my attention. Oh, boy. She was brave to reconnect, and I don't want to be harsh, but she certainly has not been a good friend to me. What do you think?
You haven't been a good friend to her either.
Yeah, I don't understand what the problem is.
What? Like,
why is there some resentment?
Yeah, why
is... Popped out of nowhere.
Why does
it sounds like she just left the friendship.
Right? Why does there have to be an aggrieved party? You know what I'm saying? Like, we were friends, we're not so close anymore.
There was a falling out in the friend group that I was a really big part of at the beginning of the year, and one person of the friend group really fell out. And they felt like it was so much need that they needed to get like a last word in there, or like that something needed to be resolved. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if you don't want to be our friend, don't be a part of the friend group. I don't think all this needs to be said, or nothing needs to be rekindled.
Yeah.
No apologies need to happen. We don't want you part of the friend group
just
anymore.
Get on with your life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's done now. What's okay? You know?
Sorry, I was handling administrative tasks. Let me, remind me, this person, was there an animus when they left the friend group, or they just like faded away?
They faded.
And then they tried to reconnect, and this guy's hosed up about it.
35 years later, they come back. It's 4 days.
Where have you been?
The 3 ladies stayed tight. The one went out and lived some life.
Yeah.
And then 35 years later, she's like, hey, what's going on?
This was from college?
Yeah.
What is with these late stage life people?
I don't know.
With this drama?
I'd be like, isn't this cool? I haven't seen you for 30 years.
Yeah.
What's going on? What did I miss? I mean,
gosh, that sounds like a great time to reconnect.
Yeah.
They're like, how dare you, Gretchen? Like, what a weird situation.
You weren't there for me when I had my divorce 15 years ago. It's like,
I was more interested in all the different things this lady had going on in her life in between the 35 years.
Right.
It's the line that says, I have friends who have supported me all my life and deserve my attention. She was brave to reconnect, I guess. And I don't want to be harsh, but she certainly has not been a good friend to me. Like, the question is, what's she asking of you? Could you just act like you've never met her? Would you just be friends with her because she's like, hey, what's your life? Mm-hmm. Want to hear my life?
Yeah.
Right? Would you be like, if you're not been my friend for 35 years, we're not friends.
Yeah.
And I won't take on any new friends.
Yeah. That is weird. I actually think about... like, I don't have that many, like, super close friends, but, like, there's a few of them that, like, I didn't know 15 years ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you just weren't as, like, what a weird standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially because the thought is, like, people, 35 years produces a lot of differences, right? Like, there's people I graduated high school with, and I did not care for them. They were not nice people, and I wasn't a nice person. And here I find myself some years later going, I bet they've changed some, and I've changed some. Maybe we could be friends. I don't know. But this woman's like, look, you support me for 35 years straight, or you cut a trail. Like, I will not. Like, is she asking for money? Is she trying to stay at your house? Is she like, hey, where have you been for 35 years? If she's bringing animosity in here, I'd be like, ah, look, man, I don't got time for this. Like, you made choices, and like, we're not super close anymore. And most of that seems like it's on you because you didn't want it. And like, I'm over it. So like, if you want to grab coffee or something, cool, but I'm not going to feel bad about 35 years. But like, if she's just like, hey, it's been a long time. You want to catch up? And you're like, how dare you?
Yeah. Okay. Anybody that would describe a situation in which someone attempted to approach and talk to them as that person being brave is a two-penny turd.
Yeah.
Like, what are we, like, how highly do you have to think about
what's
yourself?
What's the scale of turds?
It goes up to 10.
Okay, 10 is the best.
Yeah, a dime turd.
Okay, got it. That's it. I just want to make sure I'm understanding this in relation.
Here's how I want you to remember. Here's how you remember. If you saw a turd on the sidewalk and goes, you know what? I know I'm not supposed to buy them, but I'd give a dime for that. That's a good one.
Okay. So, but if there was 2 pennies under this one, I wouldn't move it.
Yeah, you wouldn't even move it to get a couple pennies out. So anyway, like what do you have to think about yourself? Like, you just have to be such an arrogant person to go, that's real brave for you to approach me. Yeah. I think the advice is stop being who you are as an individual.
Okay. Yeah, you need a community.
Yeah, I can't speak about Gretchen at all, but you seem like a real show and a half.
I would tell her, open her mind a little bit to making new friends and new connections.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I guess I'm not that old. And so, or like, old I don't friends. Know what it's like to be in that stage of life, but like, I can't imagine me wanting to be shut down the idea of talking to someone. Because, I mean, at this point, 35 years, that's a whole different person than you knew.
Yeah.
So your mind's will be talking to a whole new person.
Yeah. It feels like you could learn all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. Super interesting things like, hey, what happened to you 35 years ago? You seem to just fog your way out. And then we're like, where did they go? And no one knew. What a mysterious.
I'm impressed that she has no curiosity on what this gal has been going on in her life.
Yeah.
I'm like, you knew this person. Apparently, they were part of your friend group. How is there not like a little bit of curiosity?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Actually,
what happened?
Yeah. I can't tell you how any of the friends I had in high school, which I don't have anymore, I don't know what happened to them or why we're not friends anymore. It's not like we're not friends, but like, they certainly fogged their way out. I have no idea why I stopped talking to them on a regular basis. I just did. You know, and I'm not like, I can't believe that happened. Like, it's just a logical outpouring of living life. Things like that happen, you know? It's weird. All right, Segular says, I think you have two choices. You can ignore this former friend's attempt to reconnect, or you can respond by asking her what prompted her to reach out after all these years. If she tells you she wants to get together, depending on her answer, either agree or explain that your past diverged decades ago, you have busy life, and you are not available.
This seems like her advice is to roll a die with either a 1 or a 2 on it. Mm. Like, you know what you could do? You could reject her wholeheartedly, or you could be open to the invitation. Excellent advice. Like, it's like, go buy a magic 8-ball.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to do one more.
Okay.
Last one, sorry. Dear Life from the Path, while looking through some old stuff at home, we unexpectedly came across our late mother's false teeth. Our family members cannot agree as to what we should do with them. We have mixed feelings.
Sorry.
Wow.
Dawson started it.
Wow.
He was laughing. It was inappropriate, Mike.
Hey, lock in. We have mixed feelings.
Okay.
It's such a personal item, it seems wrong to just discard them. At the same time, it somehow seems creepy to hold on to them. There are plenty of more appropriate reminders of Mom already. She passed away many years ago, by the way. Your thoughts?
I gotta get a question before. Did any of your parents like keep your baby teeth?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. Kept them?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, we never kept that stuff.
Really?
No.
Did you do the tooth fairy growing up?
Yeah.
When was the ruse up?
The ruse?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I think I caught my mom one time.
Yeah.
That, or like, I think I laid it without telling them. And then I'm like, it's still there in the morning.
Yeah.
A fairy would know that. Test the waters. You're like, hey.
I'm like, I'm not going to tell them that I lost a tooth.
They're what kind of omniscient fairy would come down already?
Mysterious spiritual being would know.
Yeah.
I know I was always, I snuffed it out first. I was the oldest. It was easy.
Did Santa go the wayside around the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did they ever claim to be workers of Santa?
Oh, what was it? They said he can't use our chimney, so we put a bell on the door, and so they would make sure to open the door and make the bell noise when I was downstairs, like in my room, so I could hear the bell.
Yeah.
Santa coming through the front door.
Yeah.
Because our chimney didn't open up.
Nice.
Smooth.
I feel like,
but
my...
just to keep the... just flipping it on its head, instead of Mom keeping your baby teeth, keeping Mom's dentures.
Yeah, I... yeah, you know, it's a lot of the gray hairs here. But most people don't call them false teeth. Because that's a real George Washington way of thinking about it. Okay, back to the denture question.
I think you make a necklace.
Okay, Dan. That's a thought.
Okay, you can trade it off each year.
Okay, I do not construe this as support for Dan. But I will tell you that it actually is a relatively modern thing to not keep this type of thing. Like, this notion of even 60 years ago, it wouldn't be odd to go, hey, I'm going off to school. Let me have a lock of your hair. And people would like giving their hair away and you keep it. And so like, it's not crazy, but I also would say it feels like a toupee to me. Like it's not of their body. It's something they added onto it. And so if you found your dad's wig, would you be like, yeah, keep it. Put it on the mantle.
What would you do with it?
A wig?
No, the dentures. Put them in a... I mean, you're going to display them. You're going to keep them out on the foyer.
This starts to tell you things maybe you don't want to know. As you look around the room of your siblings, you'll be like, which one of you wants to keep these teeth?
Yeah.
And there's one guy who goes, yeah, I want them. I'm like, dude, you are not babysitting anymore.
Yeah. Also, like, it's not like your mom used to take them out at night and then put them on a shelf in the living room. She probably kept them in the bathroom because she's like, not everybody needs to be part of this. And then you find it and you're like, maybe everybody needs to be a part of this.
Yeah, my mom kept hers in a cup.
Yeah.
She put a little effort in or whatever those things were called.
Yeah, yeah.
And I never touched them ever.
I was going to ask, so like when your mom passed, Dan, as you were looking around at things, like were there things that stood out as sentimental to you?
Oh, yeah.
As you were like cleaning out her apartment?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have some things in the building across the street. We were doing drywall, and I have stuff behind walls there, like a jacket that she had that I couldn't throw it away. And I thought, I don't know what to do with this, so it's behind a wall.
Your mom's coat.
My
is
mom's
in that
coat
clinic?
Is across the street in a massage parlor. But I also have like 10 totes in my garage that I just need to go through and throw away now. It's been long enough. But the time I was like, oh, they got this 29-cent costume jewelry stuff that she really liked, and what some of it might be valuable. Like, I'm gonna take this pile of junk to a jeweler, but at the time it was highly sentimental.
Yeah,
and now it's just like, that's just dumb.
But not the dentures didn't strike you.
I don't even recall. I think she just we just. I think they just went with her.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I suppose. Yeah.
Dude.
Oh, that would how, be yeah, how weird... did they miss these? Is it an extra pair that like? Got too small? Or like...
Got too small?
I don't know.
I don't either.
But like, yeah, how did that not go with her?
Dentures. I don't know. Maybe they got the showpiece dentures out for special occasions.
Maybe. These are my Christmas dentures.
Yeah, they sit in effort at all the time.
Or your death dentures? Like there was a special one for the viewing?
Maybe.
That would be weird.
Actually, like all, for people who have dentures, how many do you have? You don't see?
I don't know. I probably would have 3, I think.
I'd have a showpiece.
Situational
for sure.
Dentures.
Yeah, one for comedy reasons.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
One for comedy.
Okay, at the end of the day, the question is, she already passed away many years ago, by the way.
It.
What do we
the,
think? Is it creepy to hold on to him?
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. So, yes, it is creepy. But the question is that like if you had 3 other siblings and one of them really wanted them, would you stop them from being able to keep
them?
No.
I don't think anybody has a right to stop another sibling from keeping it. Unless there's like 2 of them that really want to keep it. I don't know.
What if you're like, what went wrong?
Two at the top or the bottom?
Something wrong with our family.
What if your dad had a peg leg and then you found it?
Yeah.
Would you be like, oh, who wants to take this home?
That actually, I think I would keep.
Yeah.
That would be kind of cool to display.
Because doesn't that feel central to his personality at some point?
Are peg legs out? Do they not even make them anymore? You call it a prosthetic.
Prosthetic.
I wouldn't feel the same about one of those metal springy things.
Yeah.
But if the man had like a legit carved out wooden leg, I feel like I would keep it.
Yeah.
Now, one of the parents in our family had a sexual object.
Oh.
That was left behind. And we're like, nobody wanted to touch it.
I imagine.
Super relevant, Dan.
Well,
I thought that's where the story ended.
However,
all right.
It also disappeared.
Stop.
So anyway, Secular was asking.
Okay, that does make for an odd family reunion. You know, you're looking around, you're going, I know what, one of somebody.
What you took, later yes. on, it was admitted it was a joke, and it oh. was, and they, okay. I don't know what they did.
I don't think it's creepy to keep it, though. I think it's a weird thing to keep, but like people agree.
Wait, the dentures
ways.
Or the thing Dan was saying?
Dentures. Holy cow.
I think this is fine. No.
Whoa, buddy.
No. It would have been great if someone like snuck it in your trunk, though, Dan. So like 3 months later, you open it up and like,
well, look at
it's
that.
A new gag gift for White Elephant.
Okay, here's
Christmas.
The thing, though. If someone took it for other intentions and they found out about it, you'd be like, ha, ha, just kidding. Comedy. And you're like, all right.
All right.
Oh, dear.
Okay, back to the teeth.
Yes.
God, we're going to have to edit that out. Sorry, woman.
It's got a stake. I don't do editing.
Ain't no love in this neighborhood for Dookie. Okay, so do we? What's our final advice? Creepy or not creepy? Dan?
Creepy.
Dawson?
People grieve in different ways. I don't think it's that creepy. I wouldn't keep it. But
weirdo. Creepy.
I know.
Ben?
It's creepy, but I also would allow, like, I wouldn't fight anybody over it.
No. Huh?
No.
Would
no.
you sell it at a yard sale?
Yeah. For sure.
No.
I'd get one of those skeletons.
If nobody wants it, I'm throwing that away.
Okay. At the risk of much of this going further off the rails, if you wouldn't fight over, because I think I wouldn't. I think if someone wanted to keep them, like, whatever. What would you fight over and go, you know what? No. We're not going to keep that.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh.
Keep it. The glass eye.
Dude, that's cool.
Nope, that's getting the display case right next to the peg leg.
That's my mom's glass eye.
That one's going next to the peg.
That does feel like peg leg-ish. Like, it's like a vintage nostalgia.
Yeah. I don't know.
Certainly, I think no other bits, no parts. Like, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It better be a manufactured item, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a tooth implant. I might just put it in the will somewhere. Like,
yeah.
To my daughter, I give.
Yeah, you can have this too.
Dude, that's pretty Dan, good. You should bequeath it, but like say, like I want it split amongst my surviving children.
So wait, one of my children put it in me.
That's true.
Right.
She'll probably want it back.
Anyway, I would cause a lot of trouble for whoever has to administer your estate or and or will to be like, crap, how are we going to split this tooth? He's like, I don't know. He said we had to do it.
Okay, Secular says. Oh. Secular says, talk with your dentist about this.
Stop.
Some dentists can dispose of dentures or recycle some of the parts.
Hey, you're going to have to ask Shannon Dan. Has anyone ever approached you about disposal of these dentures?
Yeah. I want to recycle these. Like,
oh,
throw them away.
The Lions Club takes them. No, those are glasses.
What a crazy question. They're like, you're done with your dentist appointment and be like, got any more questions? Yeah. I got my late mother's dentures.
Can you use
here.
These?
What should I do with these?
The dentist goes, I didn't know I had doorknob questions like doctors, but apparently I was almost out of there. And then this guy's like, okay, I have a question though.
Okay, this is the call of the police generation. We're like people all institute some, they're like, we need to talk to the authority. I found a bunch of toenail clippings from my dead uncle. Mr. Podiatrist, do you tell me how to dispose of these?
Yeah, what do I do with these? Yeah. You dispose of nails, don't you, sir? You know all about this.
Oh, man.
Oh, it's not done.
Okay.
Talk with your dentist about this. Some dentists can dispose of dentures or recycle some of the parts.
I would put a sign up in front of my dentist's office just so we're clear. Like, I am not one of these.
Yeah, 100% non-recycled dentures. That only brand new pearlies do we sell here.
I think they belong in a fish aquarium.
Yikes. It's certainly worth a try and a lot better than throwing them away or burying them in the backyard. Dude.
Why?
Hey, we should bury this.
Here lies.
Then the dog brings
denture.
It back someday.
You're like, what? I'm going to tell you what.
Police have called.
Other people are way more intentional with things than I am. I would have looked at these and thought, garbage. Immediately, these are out. This is an everyday wear item.
Ooh, I got a question.
Okay.
If you were the person clearing them out and you found them, would you tell your siblings?
Oh.
And ask if they wanted them. Would you just instantly think you'd just throw them away and not think about it?
I think it depends on, if I thought I had a sibling who might want to keep them, I would just throw them out. I'd be like, there's no way. Dave's going to want to keep these.
Yeah.
So
I'm not letting him.
No.
Yeah. He always does a bunch of weird stuff.
Yeah.
No.
I would probably send a picture to my family and say, anybody want these? And
everyone would go,
joking.
And then,
yeah.
And then here's old sex object guy going, yeah.
I got something for those.
I guess I could take those.
You know what? I'm too in on this bingo card. I was really hoping for dentures.
Dude. And then you got to clean his house out 5 years from now. I'm like, dang it.
Oh, no.
What is all this?
It's got a split next to the peg leg and the glass eye.
What are these fingernails from?
Oh, it's a weird looking bingo card sitting next to you.
Dave's greatest hits.
Dude, always avoid a man at an estate sale with a bingo card. This is no good. Hey, dude, you've been listening to Live from the
Back. I didn't think about burying him in the backyard. This is going to look like crime.
Yeah.
Well, but wouldn't you feel like you'd have to mark him? Like, here lies mom's teeth?
Yeah. You should,
that would be awesome.
You should write a note, put it in a Ziploc, be like, it's okay, these belong to my mom.
Do they allow you to put that kind of thing on a headstone in the graveyard? Like, could you just go set him there?
I suppose.
I wonder if people ever do that, and the guy who, like, keeps the place goes, nah, we ain't.
Dude,
we're not doing that.
It would be awesome if a coyote came by and then took him, and then a coyote had human teeth.
Right.
Yeah.
There's the grinning coyote of Monroe County.
Yeah. He's like, I bum a smoke. You're the coolest coyote.
Why is he a smoker?
He's a super cool coyote. He's got a full set of human teeth, and now all of a sudden he talks super suave.
Palm all. That's it. Palm all.
I Ubered here. Calm down, coyote.
All right. You're listening to Life from the Path. I don't know what you're doing with your life. You should rethink it. Thanks for hanging out with us. We really do appreciate it. I think we'll be back next week regardless. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Hoard wealth, poor crushed to the dust. Walls built on lies, foundations of mistrust. You build your ivory towers, sit on gilded thrones. But the Lord sees all, even hearts of stone. Woe to those at ease who sing idle songs. Your palace is crumbled, you've been wicked too long. The lion don't whisper, it tears through the air. The Lord won't relent till justice is fair.